100% born in the Appalachian Mountains and made in the USA, Timber Ninja Outdoors provides a range of mobile hunting options to accommodate diverse hunting preferences. Whether you prioritize comfort, lightweight design, or versatility, their two-panel and single-panel saddles collection has something for everyone. The Black Belt Nano is the lightest single-panel saddle available on the market, weighing in under a pound. The saddle is designed with the minimalist hunter in mind, focusing on lightweight functionality and breathability. One notable feature is the patent-pending magnetic stick clip system on the side, which allows for convenient transportation of sticks up the tree, as well as a built-in platform holder. The Nano saddle can be folded up to the size of a Nalgene bottle, enabling easy portability. With a four-way stretch material on the back for a comfortable fit, as well as strategically placed padding for hip pinch relief, you can use code EASTMEETSWEST to get free shipping on any Timber Ninja order. If you try it out and don't like it, send it back within 30 days for a full refund. Learn more at TimberNinjaOutdoors.com and sign up for their email newsletter for exclusive discounts and product drops. When it comes to optics, I get the same question over and over again. What are the best all-around binoculars? Well, it's tough to find something that works in every condition great, but after using a pair of Maven B1.2 10x42s, I think I found them. They feature an 8x or a 10x option, superior low light performance, tack sharp edge-to-edge clarity, a generous depth of field, and a silky focus mechanism. All of Maven Optics have a lifetime no-fault warranty and hail from the great state of Wyoming. I've been using Maven Optics since I bought my first pair in 2017, and I think you should test them out for yourself. Head over to mavenbelt.com and use the code EASTMEETSWEST-GIFT for a free gift with any full-price optics order. For all of those that want a truck bed cover for work or play, Diamondback makes the top-of-the-line, heavy-duty covers that help you do more with your truck. They're perfect for the truck-owning, avid sportsmen, outdoor enthusiasts, and weekend project warriors. I'm currently using the HD cover that is capable of holding up to 1,600 pounds on the top. And then I have the Yakima Overhaul HD bars on top so I can put my rooftop tent on it. When I'm not using my rooftop tent and able to use the trifold design of the Diamondback, I have the Crossbin 8 in there to organize all of my stuff in the back of my truck bed. Diamondback is made right here in Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. If you want to check them out, head over to diamondbackcovers.com. If you've wanted that hunting camp tradition that we talk about, that experience, but you don't have a hunting camp of your own, you're welcome to come stay at my hunting camp up here in the Pennsylvania Wilds called the Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds. So if you go over to Airbnb, you can check out our three-bedroom, one-and-a-half-bath house that's right in the heart of Pennsylvania elk country. It's only minutes away from a bunch of public land to be able to hunt, hiking trails, outdoor recreation, fishing, all of those things there. The house is completely fully stocked with everything that you need to be able to spend a week hunting deer, taking your family up to see the elk, anything like that. So if you head over to Airbnb and search Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds, you'll find my listing there and you can rent out my house. Send us a message, an inquiry that you're interested in it and mention that you heard it on the podcast here. Then we'll get you 10% off of your first stay.
Are you an adventurer looking to take your hunt to the next level? Then you're in the right place. Welcome to East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the East Meets West Hunt podcast presented by Spartan Forge. On today's episode, I am joined by the two most requested guests that I've ever had on the podcast. So I have my dad, Joe Martonic, and good buddy of mine and amazing hunter, Johnny Stewart. So we are just getting ready for the season to kick off here in Pennsylvania, and I know a lot of other states as well, and are discussing hunting from a saddle, as my dad got into it a few years ago and Johnny's just getting into it. Outlooks for the season, the full moon, weather fronts, accessing stand sites, thermal tsunamis, targeting a specific buck, and much more. On this week's Mountain Buck Monday story of a week, we have a story coming out of Pennsylvania from Ben Ayer's father. So, but Ben submitted the story and he wrote in, "My father hasn't filled a buck tag in many years. Last year, I wasn't able to be out much, but I knew of a rough area on the mountain that deer will naturally go to or go to when pushed. I hung a ladder stand for my dad on public land between two rough areas on an escape route, and my plan was to still hunt my way to him even if it took the whole day. When I got closer to him, I could tell there were deer between us, and they went out the back door of the rough area on the steep side of the mountain, just as I anticipated, and went right below him. He filled his tag, and I couldn't have been more excited for him. Great first day of rifle season in 2022, camaraderie and teamwork. Well, congratulations to Ben and his father, because that is definitely teamwork there, and there's nothing better than father-son hunting trip. You guys can head over to East Meets West Hunt on Instagram or East Meets West Outdoors on Facebook and check out the beautiful buck with Ben's father there. Thank you so much for sending that in, Ben. And if you have a story that you want to send in, would love to be able to share it on the podcast. Just send me an email, bo@eastmeetswesthunt.com, with a short paragraph or two and then a few pictures, and love to be able to share it. As the time this goes out, I should be just getting back from Alaska on this day. I should be traveling back when this episode drops here. So I'll have more on that as an update once I get back here. And then other than that, we have still going on the Sitka and East Meets West hat promotion. So basically giving away some subalpine and elevated 2 Sitka camo pattern hats with the new East Meets West logo on it. And I have a limited number of them, but you can get them for free over on the website. There's rules on how to be able to get those. So just head over to eastmeetswesthunt.com/shop and you can go over and be able to get one yourself. So really excited for that. Those things turned out amazing. North Fork Makers out of Pennsylvania, they did the leather patch on it, and it's one of the best leather patches that I've seen on a hat. So thanks for everyone for listening and supporting the podcast. If you would, if this helped you at all, please share it with a friend or two. It's all I ask, and be able to spread the word and keep this thing rolling. So thanks, and everyone, I hope you have a great rest of your week. So I'm joined by Johnny Stewart and my dad, Joe Martonic, and we're sitting here on my back porch on a nice hot summer day, and I figured, you know, while we're all here together, we could get together and do a podcast and have a couple of beers. You guys got that? Which ones you got there?
Flatbed, pale ale.
Yep, flatbed.
The flatbed, big trucks there, so.
Pretty good.
Yeah, no, those ones... Those ones are pretty good. Now they're carrying them and quite a bit across Pennsylvania now. I don't know if you noticed that, John. Remember you were asking about...
Yeah, down Pittsburgh we got them.
Yeah, they have them all around this area too.
Do they?
Yep.
Nice.
Yep. Some of the local bars and restaurants even have it on tap now.
Oh, boy. Yep. I didn't know that.
I'm not going to name the names of the restaurants on here, but...
Yeah. Why is that?
Because then people know where they're at.
Where you're at or where they're at?
Yeah, where they're at and where I'm at. Johnny's like, he thinks that's nuts, but anyway, so we were just sitting here, and Johnny came over to go over some stuff. He's gonna hunt out of the saddle this year, which, Dad, you just started hunting out in 2021 now.
2021, yep.
Yeah, so you've been a couple years in now.
Yep.
What's been your experience so far?
It's good. I mean, I used it a lot more last year than I did the first year, just because of knowing its capabilities, I guess, more than anything else. No, I enjoy hunting out of it, and I know I'm putting a lot less lock-ons or hang-ons out this year.
Yeah,
you know, and because not needed, just marking trees and know where I'm gonna go.
Yeah, and Johnny, you'd never hunted out of a saddle, but you've been hunting, you know, I guess mobily with, you know, a tree stand and stuff forever. And what have you been using up until this point?
So I've been using a lot in the east side of the country, West Virginia, PA, Ohio, is just a older lone wolf hand climber, to where your seat is maybe 16, I'm saying, by about 10, and use that as your top part, your climber, and your bottom part. Kind of packs really compact, get to a tree right up. Straight trees are great. I like getting to the tree and getting up, not fussing with putting your your lock on down, getting your all your gear going up, setting the lock on, up and down a tree. Now, hunting in the Midwest or where the trees aren't as straight, it's what I've did the last few years. And one thing I told Jason is, like, I want to be able to get to a tree. I don't know why, you know, I hike up in these mountains. I want to get there, and I want to be up in my tree. I don't like fussing at the bottom of the tree. You already spent an hour hiking in, this and that. You know what I mean? I feel like that time is important to get up and get set, because stuff can happen fast. And the extra hiking up, setting your sticks down to get the stand up and stuff like that, to me was just like extra energy that already didn't need, well, that already, that the extra energy that I'm using and you're sweating and stuff like that. So, you know, the design that you sold, I said, Bo, what do you got here? So how the sticks hang on your waist, you know, with them two little magnets, and I'm definitely going to use the sticks that pack on, like, your lumbar, the 20-inch sticks, to where I got up in that stand today, and we had the bigger platform that's coming out here in the fall.
Yep.
And another thing, with my hand climber, I would always stand on the stand below, but always stand up on the hand climbing piece, the 16 by 10, and get tight to the tree and almost look behind a tree as where my shot was going to be. A lot of times I'm not that high and it's open woods, so I like the tree as some cover. And I feel like what Jason has here is kind of identical to how I've been hunting, and he even would use a lock on with his saddle. So it's like, you know, this is kind of easy for me to transition into. So you got this bigger platform that Jason has, you guys have Timber Ninja, and I'm looking behind the tree as I usually set up. And I could stand up on that platform, which I usually do in my hand climber, and just adjust the saddle and just sit back to take a load off. I was smiling the whole time. You know, I was like, this is going to be a game changer. You know, I'm getting a little older. The hills are getting steeper for some reason.
Yeah, that's
you're still a young man.
Well, yeah. So what he's talking about, the stuff that you're using is the Timber Ninja's ultimate saddle, and then the ledge platform, which is, like, I believe it's 14 by 14 is perfect, as far as the size of it. Yeah. And that's what you got up there and you started smiling right away. You're like, man, this feels like, you know, when I'm standing on the seat, I'm able to move around, be able to get the shots and be able to do it. And what you were interested in, because I've been trying to sell you on a saddle for a while. Mm-hmm. When I say sell you, like, try to get you to use one because I see the benefits of it. And it wasn't until you got this one in your hands and you're like, oh, I can put my sticks on the back with the mud flap stick carrier there. I have the magnetic clips. I can go in. I can go up and never have to come down to the bottom of the tree. And you're talking about being efficient. It's nice to be able to get up in there and be able to do it. So I think, you know, you're like, you just got a new bow. You just picked up a new prime. So you're going to be shooting. And
deer in trouble this year, Bo. I mean,
did you get all the same arrows?
Oh,
Not yet.
We're working on it.
He's working on the arrows.
But what I found too, John, was and Bo, is I wasn't going as high now. You know, and I might pack two, maybe three sticks if I'm going to be, you know, if I know I'm mobile and just hunting fresh sign. And because you don't need to get up that high.
Yeah.
You know, I find myself only going two sticks, maybe three at most. And because you have that cover for that tree, and it's
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, because you're behind the tree, so you have that. And then you can also get in trees that have a bunch of branches or whatever and just tuck in it, no matter how high, you know. It's funny because when I was first telling you, Dad, about, like, the different types of trees you can get in and small ones, I think you hunted out of smaller trees than I ever have. Like, you showed me some of the setups, and you're getting in these pole trees that are small and only one or two sticks high and just kind of tucking in some of those older clear cuts that are tough to get, you know, stands in typically. You can get right in there and tuck into some of those spots and just get up high enough where you're out of sight a little bit.
Yeah, I was in an ironwood tree last year that was only probably 5 inches in diameter at the bottom, but I was only, it was two sticks, but stick and a half up. I didn't really need the second stick, but just a little more stability. But it was perfect. I had doe feeding around me, you know, different times. I never had a clue I was there. And I was only, you know, 6 feet off the ground from my platform, 5 feet off the ground.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
And that ultimate that, like, it was warm today, but I had it on for an hour, and it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't bad, like heat, sweat, like how people said maybe it might be too warm early on, but it, like, no, that thing's.
Yeah, because it has the padding on it, so it gives a look of it like it would be hot on your backside. But that foam and stuff that's in there and the material is breathable to a point. You know, it still has some insulation value there too, but it's not terrible to be able to walk in with and be able to have it even when it's hot. And the thing is, it's across the back of your butt and your hip as you're going in. It's not like in your high heat areas, like in your crotch or your armpit or anything that's going to like really be, you know, putting off a lot of heat.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah. So that's good. I've only shot out of my saddle this summer once so far. So we're recording this in the beginning of August, just by the way, it'll come out here in September, but, that's my plan. Is like all summer I've been shooting long ranges, like getting my bow set up. Now it's like I've learned over the years, it's like leading up to hunting season, now practice the real hunting shots, you know, even just going out in the yard. And well, I'll play a game where I just throw arrows in different parts of the yard and don't range it and try to guess. And then just, you know, keep your pin in the same place, not adjusting it, not sliding it, just like trying to practice those real situations. Or get up in the tree, shoot a couple. I put my 3D target, which is destroyed right now, but if it wasn't, I'd have it, you know, put it at, you know, some quartering two angles, quartering away, shooting off the weak side of the saddle, and practice these different things, because that seemed to be like I'll get opportunities every year, and sometimes they're just different shot angles, and it's just practicing those versus just shooting long range that I've been doing all summer. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my plan there.
Being up on that platform, I didn't see no issues, like as far as getting shooting out of it. Like it, I feel like I'm going to catch on to that roof. It's nothing.
Yeah,
you have the thing. It comes up here.
Definitely got to spend some time in it with your bow in hand.
Yeah,
but doing shots, because
it didn't feel foreign. It wasn't like, oh, yeah, I don't like this. I felt pretty much at home, just like you said, a matter of shooting and moving around, putting your knee on a tree, and
yeah,
you're gonna have a lot more opportunity as far as around a tree.
You're shot, right.
You know, shots. You're not, because you can swing around and.
But I enjoyed standing up on that platform, and you can turn 360 really.
Yeah, and you can use it just like a tree stand if you want to, and stand on it. And
I feel like that. I always get tight to the tree and stand a lot of the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you have the saddle to sit back. So I'm kind of at home with that as far as how I hunted with that hand climb, because I was always standing up tight to the tree, watching. My ears ain't real good. I feel like I'm always watching, you know, then take a load off, sit down for a little bit. So.
Yeah, and you can even do that with a hang-on with the saddle. And that's one of the biggest things Jason at Timber Ninja always says is like, he's not trying to, you know, with having a company that's selling saddle hunting equipment, that doesn't mean that anti-tree stand. Tree stands can be great, but you can use it as a fall restraint device too. Mm-hmm. So you can, you know, hang out of, be in a hang-on and sit down and do it like normal, but you still get the opportunity to shoot around the backside of the tree if you want, and use it as kind of a hybrid approach.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's a nice add-on or, I guess, feature with it there. But how about, yeah, both you guys got set up with new bows this year.
Yeah.
You got my bow from last year, the Prime Inline and everything, and you got a dialed sight on there and everything, so you've been messing around with that a little bit.
Yeah, I shoot every morning before work, and no, I'm liking it. Definitely getting the reps in, and like you, I'm going to break out the 3D target here pretty soon and start doing real-life situations and move around the yard, different angles.
Shit's getting real, he said.
Yeah, it's coming quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's funny that Johnny got a Prime. He bought a Prime here recently because so you've been a Hoyt guy for your whole life, right?
Oh, yeah, pretty much.
And it was funny because, so Mitch from Prime, he'll probably listen to this, but Mitch and myself, we've been trying to talk you into trying one, and you're like, "No, I'm good with what I got."
No, that's all right.
And at Total Archery Challenge, you went and you shot it, and you still were like, "I want to shoot them all." And you went to the archery shop and talk a little bit about that.
So yeah, Bo said, "Check out the Prime." Mitch is over there. I'm like, went and shot one there, and you had to TAC and shot the Hoyt, but not like side by side. It was like I was over here, and 10 minutes later, I'm like, been a Hoyt man for a long time. And Bo's like, yeah, you know, I've been shooting this prime. And it seems like I'm using stuff that Bo uses, but it's not because Bo's using it, because it's good stuff.
Bo knows. Not like,
yeah. But he does know, I guess. But I'm using my own, pulling my own, like, putting my own judgment on it just because, like, but yeah, I went to a bow shop and set the Hoyt, the new Hoyt up. And I pretty much went there to buy a Hoyt. I said, well, set that prime up. And side by side, you know, the hand grip being in the middle really balances the bow. And, you know, it's not so much a reflex in your riser, you know what I mean? It's like compared to the Hoyt and a little bit smoother. And I shot a ton of arrows out of the Hoyt and then the prime. And side by side, the prime, like, wow, I never thought I'd do it. But, yeah, so I'm probably a month in. And another thing I had, well, my bow was 13 years old, my Hoyt. And I thought I had the cat's meow. Boy, I was like, I have me a good bow. It ain't getting any better than this. Yeah. You know, they broke the mold after they made this bow. Then I go shoot these new ones. I'm like, oh, shit, there's no comparison. Well, I was living in the dark ages, you know, like. I've been working on my target panic. It's a thing that I've had for years, and the less I would shoot, the better. So I actually started here with this new bow and really just blind bell shooting, really practicing on my my trigger, getting knuckle deep, second knuckle deep, and really squeezing and letting that shot be a surprise, you know. So
yeah.
So yeah, and I sighted in a 20-yard pin here before I come up here, and just happy with that. I'm going to keep focusing on my target panic, and here in the next few weeks start getting out the 30, 40, 50, you know.
Yeah, because you were saying that, like, you'd been shooting without, you know, worrying about a sight, anything, just getting through, kind of reteaching yourself how to shoot again, which is happens to us all, and, you know, kind of going through it. But back to the point where you're saying, like, using the gear that I'm using, it's funny because, you know, anybody listening or watching, you think, you know, me and Johnny are friends, that's why we use the same gear. But Johnny's a very tough one to get to switch from anything that he uses. And, you know, even with trying to get into saddles, it was a multiple year process. And then he had multiple different products with him and was like, show me how to use this stuff and let me make my own judgment. And I respected that. You were like, let me go through and see, and not just saying, oh, you know, just because what I say is going to work isn't. And you went through it, and you're,
yeah,
like,
right, you're right. That's so what I did, you know?
Yeah. So that was pretty cool there. But yeah, just fine tuning gear and getting ready kind of for the season here. But the big thing is, you know, last year was kind of a weird year as far as the hunting season. You know, we talked about it on here before, but, you know, it was a hot rut, and it was just like kind of a tough time period. But what are you thinking about this year? What's kind of like your predictions on it? Let's start with you, Dad.
As far as
how do you feel, like, as far as like the food so far, the weather this summer, like what are you feeling, like what you're seeing camera wise? I mean, not specifically, but
yeah. And food wise, I think the food sources are, I mean, it's going to be mainly browse in most of my areas. The apples are few and far between. Black cherry, few and far between.
Yeah, I haven't seen any cherry.
I did see some beech nut in one area, but that's not consistent. I ventured in some an oak area here in the spring that I may end up hunting, but I haven't been back to see if any oaks are in that section. But I you know, pretty much my hunting's either apple trees or browse, or beech nut or cherry, and I didn't even see any choke cherries either, because that's usually the early drop. But yeah, so I'm just going to be pretty much scrape hunting, and, you know, early season I'm going to go out, maybe try to take a doe and get some meat in the freezer. But if a nice buck comes by, or if I get on to a good bedding routine of a big buck, then I'll definitely pursue that and try to get one early season. But camera-wise, you know, I've been putting cameras out, trying to get out a couple times a week, putting more cameras out. Haven't checked a whole lot yet, did here last weekend, did get to a couple that have been soaking since probably February, March, and just up the batteries on them. Got some decent bucks on them, but nothing that's getting me like really pumped up, but definitely something I would shoot though.
Yeah. Oh, that's I'll be interested to hear then what Johnny says about the food situation. But I'm gonna go out tomorrow and check an area that I know has oaks. But it seems like just in places I've been driving and stuff, it seems like a really good acorn year.
Mm-hmm.
Just across the board, it seems like, and even in different parts of the state, this part of the state, everything seems to be, you know, just from there was that rainstorm there a few weeks back that had blown off some limbs and some stuff, and there was some acorns I've seen on the ground, so hoping that's the case, and that's probably going to shift some of my early season stuff, although we'll be in South Dakota for the first week,
right?
But after that, like, I'm going to try to look at some of these areas that have acorns that I scouted and maybe try to focus on that in October and leave the other spots that I have that are kind of more rut spots until a little bit later. But
yeah, I'd definitely have to get back and revisit that acorn grove that I found in Oak Grove and see if there's anything there.
Yeah.
So you guys are going to be going the first week, leave me drag my deer out by myself?
Yeah, unfortunately, John.
It's all right. I see how you are.
you were calling me the other day about you were, you know, down working and everything and said that there was acorns falling off the trees like rain.
I talked to Kenny Kane, believe it or not. I got a hold of KK.
Yeah.
So we had a dry May, not just back near Pittsburgh, but up here, too, was really dry.
And end of June, middle of June.
Back our way, friends of mine and even places I've been to, acorns are falling out of the tree prematurely. And Kenny said, yeah, pretty much they're aborting because of that dry spell in May. I don't know if that's happening everywhere, but acorns were coming down in June into July, so just be aware of that. I mean, a lot of them might be off the tree. I don't know if all of them, you know, talking to Kenny, just can't handle the whole crop, the tree, and just dropping acorns, you know, so something to be aware of, you know, when you're out checking for acorns. But I probably got a dozen cameras out. I'd like to get one early while you guys are out in South Dakota, you know.
I hope you do. Camp Cook.
If I don't do any good, you know, I know you guys got a lot of spots, so maybe I'll jump in there real quick, you know.
Yeah.
Got the whole place to myself, basically.
Yeah, I know.
But I told Joe just before we got on here, I got a cut that isn't on any maps. Even on Spartan 4, just this cut must be 3 years old or some well roads going through it, but it's the right age, maybe the 3 years or so. And even though them oil well roads are going through there, I feel like a deer could be, a good buck could be, the browse is there, the variety of food's there, they could be in there even when the trucks come by checking or someone drives up the road, they could just bed down and get by. So I'm going to focus that first week on some cuts like that. Hopefully I'll get a crack at one. Then I got cameras soaking for where I want to be, rut some areas. And last year, compared to this year, one thing I learned is don't always go by historic. I kind of got hell-bent last year on historical data to where I was hunting near a road and there was a cut and does and bucks were crossing and I put a lot of time into there and for some reason it didn't happen, you know, and I was kind of hell bent that that's going to happen this year. And it, I know they did a herbicide spray in there, but does were still in there and I don't, you know, some, they were cutting nearby, but just.
Have you ever wanted to have Levi Morgan, Andy May, Johnny Stewart and others available at all times? Well, you can with Cyber Scout from Spartan Forge. Cyber Scout is like the ChatGPT for outdoors men and women. You can ask it any questions related to bow building, scouting, hunting, survival, and a whole lot more. I think you'll be impressed with how it responds. Cyber Scout is currently out now for a select group of early beta testers and will be available to the rest of you really soon. The entire app is a complete tool for planning your hunt with incredible aerial imagery mapping, journaling, deer prediction, and some of the most accurate and detailed weather data. Use the code EASTMEETSWEST to save 20%. And if you're still on the fence, give the 14-day free trial a chance at SpartanForge.ai. CVA has been America's number one selling muzzleloader brand for over a decade. Hunting with a muzzleloader opens up a ton of hunting opportunities across the U.S., and I've been using the Acura series. But they don't only make badass muzzleloaders. Their line of centerfire rifles are great quality and not terrible on the wallet. The Cascade short barrel is ideal for tight quarters, deer drives, and quick shots in the big woods. You can check out their line of muzzleloaders, rifles, and accessories for every season and every range at bpioutdoors.com/CVA. If you use the code EASTMEETSWEST10, you'll get 10% off of all CVA products, which includes rifles, muzzleloaders, and accessories.
You know, and I know better, but I kind of stuck in there. It's going to happen. Even though I didn't have a hunt at railroad bed, me and you were.
Yeah.
The year before, there was good deer there, and you know, I was kept sticking it out and have a few spots in mind because it's such a juggling act. You know, should I keep it out? Last year, this was a spot, and there was another spot, a scrape down off that point where you and your dad pushed down, you know, for me in the winter that one time. And that was always hot, and last year it wasn't good. So I don't know if it's because I put a little bit of scent in there and the wind was blowing up that point once or twice, but man, I was hell bent on, because you get so many spots in mind that you want to hunt, and then you're like, you know, then 1 year goes and you're like, you're running around like a chicken with his head cut off. You're like, no, I need to focus on this spot. So I picked two spots and it wasn't happening. So I was already, you know, keeping an open mind out there and have those other spots. And when it's, if, you know, if it's time to hunt or a week or so before and nothing's happening, you know, get out and see what's going on elsewhere, you know?
Yeah, and I think I learned that a lot last year too, and just about, you know, I still think historical data is super important, but you also got to look at the facts of what's being thrown in front of you too. It's like, okay, you know, like I've talked about it on here before, so I won't really gripe on it a little bit, but you know, this spot that I was in, yeah, the last 2 years it was hot at these certain times of the years, but conditions were different. I was getting doe pictures all through October, and I was getting, you know, it eventually started to heat up where last year it was just never, didn't even start, you know, to get to the point where you could hit that climax part where it was really good and everything. It just never was there. And I was kind of ignoring that a little bit until, you know, the day that I moved and ended up shooting my deer was just, it was just like, okay, looking at, you know, I've also talked about this, but you know, you two have kind of helped me with it. Whenever I have problems, I feel like I'm struggling. When I call you guys, you look at it from a non-emotional side of things. So you're not emotionally attached to it, so you can do it. So it's like, how can I do that? So I'm looking at the facts. It's like, okay, there's not any does in here right now. Well, that's what the bucks are looking for. You know, there's additional hunting pressure that's moved in. That's kind of a problem. The browse is kind of browning up. Well, that's a little bit of a problem. There's not a lot of food here. Maybe that's why the does aren't here. And those are just things that I need to think about and focus on, you know, during that time period. And so I just looked at it and it was like the cons outweighed the pros at that point, and it was time to move. And I think that's really important to note. So like, I think this year kind of going into it, I'll almost go off of data from a couple of years ago more than last year. Last year just felt like an outlier in general, but I have a spot, I have a buck that, I mean, he's so old that it's ridiculous. Ooh. You know, he's,
when you're going to South Dakota,
listen, John, so he,
he's not moving.
I don't know if he made it yet. I put a bunch of cameras out. No, I haven't been in there, but, he's probably going to be 10 years old. And if he is, you know, and if he's doing some of the things he's done, I think I could have a crack at him early season, but it takes some off the wall thinking for it. So I kind of thought where one of the spots I think he lives at, I circled cameras all around it and just some weird spots, not just on the scrapes that I normally get them on, but just some, you know, faint trails coming out. It's just around, there's, you know, blow down with a little trail goes around it, you know, put some cameras there, just like trying to look, think outside the box a little bit. for this deer, and I'd like to get in there, you know, when I get back from South Dakota, you know, early to mid-October, and see what I can do. That's one of my plans. But I've been doing this summer is just getting cameras out, and then like in August I'll go and I'll start checking some of them and start seeing where I want to focus on. Like my strategy this year has been put a wide web of cameras out in the summer here and just try to locate a buck. Cause I really don't have, besides that deer, I really don't have like a specific deer that I'm really focused on. So it's just like, try to figure out where there's, you know, maybe multiples or one or something in an area. Then I'll start fine tuning those spots.
That's the other thing I'm doing is, from my spring scouting and shed hunting, I'm going through my notes, you know, throughout the summer here. Okay, where, and then going through the Sport and Forage app, finding the scrapes that I marked, and trying to get cameras to all these locations. Maybe I found a nice shed that, see if that buck made it through the winter. Just because he shed his horn doesn't mean he made it. Where is he coming from? Plus, there's been some other bucks that I've had that I filmed here last rut that just showed up out that I never filmed before. And one was a really, really nice buck. And I couldn't find the sheds this spring. And I've been throwing cameras in that area and reaching out, just trying to find where he's coming from. And so far, no luck yet. But hopefully he repeats it. And that historical data, you know, maybe in that time frame that week. And I remember texting you there the week before I shot my buck, telling you, you know, I'm going to be in this tree at this time because this is when this scrape really gets hot, and he did show up, but it was a nighttime photo.
Yeah.
But I did end up shooting my buck out of that stand this year.
Yeah.
It was just a little bit later, right?
Yeah, it was a little bit later. Yeah, it was shifted. It was definitely shifted by, almost a week, I think, the activity.
Yeah, it was weird, and I mean, and we've seen it this spring. You brought it up. Another guest I had on the podcast, Paul Putera, brought it up, is that you were seeing fawns born later.
Yeah,
this year.
Yeah, like much later. What was that one doe hanging on to that fawn? When was that fawn born?
Oh, I can't remember.
Was it the end of June?
Yeah, it was around. It was towards the end of June.
Yeah. So that's pretty late. You know, obviously, and that wasn't like a young doe, was it?
No, didn't look like it.
It looked like, you know, normally you'd think, okay, maybe that's possible with some younger does or whatever, but from showing the pictures when you showed she was pregnant, and then you got a picture, because it was on a cell cam, so you got to see exactly when it was born, essentially. Yeah. And it was really interesting to see that, and I even seen it just even around my house and stuff.
Yeah, what do we figure? That would have been mid-December, Brad?
Mid-December, yeah.
Yeah, it was really, really interesting, and there was quite a bit of that, and Paul was seeing that a lot at the beginning of June, some does or some fawns being born and everything in some of his areas and different part of the state. So it's pretty interesting to see how that was. Now my personal opinion is the rut happens no matter what the weather is, rut's going to happen, you know, but there was definitely some sort of a shift. I think there were still does that were bred at the normal time and everything, but there was some that...
Yeah, me personally, my opinion is I'm relating it to the full moon. When we had that full moon there, was it the 5th of November or something like that? I think that dampens... I mean, that's just my personal opinion. I think that shuts things down as far as the doe. The bucks are still going to move looking for the doe, but I think it does something and sets it back. But that's just my opinion based off of some of the data I've had, prior years' experiences.
What have you noticed that? Like, cause I know you've had a lot of moon data over the years. Like, what have you seen that correlate to as far as like with the rut being full moon around that time?
It seems to delay or takes the doe out of, cause it's, they come in heat with the photosynthesis, if I'm using the right term, but, and I think with that full moon light out, I think that changes it because now it's bright during the night. So I think that shuts it down or lays it a little bit.
It up.
And then it once the full moon's over, then they pick back up to their normal, period, I guess, or however that, happens. But, to me, it seems like it delays it. just from my experiences.
Do you put much weight on the moon, like as far as like with your hunting or anything throughout the years, or is it something you track mostly?
No, I still hunt during a full moon, but I have in the back of my mind, like I can remember the I think it was 2000. I don't know if it was a 5 or 10 when, but I told myself I got to kill a buck Halloween weekend, because the full moon was going to be like the 3rd or 4th.
Mm-hmm.
And based off my workload and vacation and that, and I end up getting it done, thankfully. But after that, it was a terrible rut that year for bow hunter. And I think our season did end a week sooner than we've been carrying an extra week here in PA, or at least maybe half a week lately, last couple of years, where before we were ending, that second weekend, it was over.
Yeah.
So they, just ran out of time. And then Thanksgiving week, it was on. I think rifle hunters had a field day with buck rutting activity that year as well. But, yeah, it seems like it just delays it to me. Is there any scientific evidence that I can throw at it? No, it's just my observations over the years.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have some pretty extensive data just of your own experiences, mm-hmm. as far as with the moon and how it affects it. And that's honestly something I've never really paid attention to. Do you pay attention to that at all, John?
With my buddy Robbie, he always talks about the moon early, and he'll hunt. He's in around early October. He likes that underfoot or whatever they call them, full moon. That's
the moon overhead.
Something like that.
On their feet. Underfoot.
Yeah. So me, I just listen to him. If he says it's good and I got some time and I got a place I want to hunt, I'm going to go hunt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I hunt when I can, I don't know. I think I look more on weather cooler, like early on, or
right.
weather patterns to catch deer movement. But if someone else says it's good, I don't know.
So I'm curious with you, Johnny, when you talk about like the weather fronts and everything, do you like pre-cold front, cold front, or post-cold front, or just weather front, I should say?
Probably the pre. I've seen more action, deer really stir, I don't know what the pressure is, if it's something to do with that, but like a heavy, cloudy day that's dead calm before the storm, that's when I've seen bucks. They got to put the feed bag on. Something's coming. Something's in the works. Maybe 5-10 hours ahead of the storm. I feel like it seems like just a calm, heavy, cloudy day. I feel like I know they sense something's, and then I feel like it can weather a storm to some degree. Then on the backside, start moving. But I think that's just nature for them to. But there's also times I've seen during storms, more so, I think, into rifle season when maybe the pressure's high and trees are cracking and wind's blowing. I've seen deer just so nervous, just move all day. I've seen it a few times. Like if I'm rifle hunting, I want a windy, snowy, cold day. It also helps you get around, but the deer are just nervous and can't sit still. They can't really use their senses. I think it also coincides with being pressure in the woods. Even into January, if you're in an area where they, there's potential predators. I've seen them group up and just hike, man, just move. I've seen most of my deer. I love those. I don't know if it's even, maybe it is. It, just their senses are dulled and they're just nervous and on. I've seen that a lot.
Yeah.
Even with guys that track and gun hunting up in the Northeast, that it's guys I've talked to, it's just crazy windy, trees cracking day is really awesome.
Do you think that's because you said they're nervous, like as far as because of the weather, or do you think it's that also, people aren't in the woods at that time, or what?
Their senses are, they can't use their senses and they're just on edge. I think they can't detect any predators and they're just always moving. They just, any little tree crack, they're moving, they're running, they're jumping, just can't sit still.
Yeah.
But I've seen gun hunting and tracking deer, that's the most deer I've ever seen and then days like that,
What about
I've never really bow hunted. I don't know if I ever put, because usually when it's windy and crazy, you're not in a tree.
I like to get in a tree right after, at the tail end of a good storm.
Yeah.
It seems like the deer, and usually when you have a good storm, in I guess November or late October, there's a cold front moving in. And whether that's, why they're on their feet, or it's like you, that they're on their feet because of all the trees coming down, limbs coming down, and they're moving. But I've killed several bucks at that morning, the storm. I'm in a tree when it's still happening, before it gets light, and, the tree's just kicking around, and then things start settling down about 8, 9 o'clock. I knew it was going to happen that way, and sure enough, here it comes.
Oh, yeah.
But other times, I remember another situation. I was in a tree when it was in the evening, though, probably around 4 o'clock, and a storm was coming through. And I thought, well, it wasn't no lightning, but just high winds and that. And tree ended up coming down pretty close to me. So I got down as quick as I could with the climber and started beating feet to get out of there because it was getting pretty nasty. And then it calmed down just as quick as it kicked up. And then I still hunted. And I end up killing a buck then. Wow. Off the ground with a stand on my back. But I like the tail ends of the storms.
Yeah.
I think that they're definitely moving, and like I said, it's usually a cold front moving in too, and that may be part of it.
Yeah. I've found, like, especially with the first snows and everything, the tail end of that is better than when it's actually snowing or coming down. That's my opinion.
Right. I agree with that.
From my experiences, it's just like that end. But also I've seen the pre part of it too, that like Johnny was talking about there at the beginning, more so than directly in the middle of it. But thinking back on it, maybe I just wasn't in the right spots at that point too, where that they would be moving or doing anything during the middle of that storm. I do remember, this is just trail camera data, but it was 2015 November 14th. This is a rut type time frame, but it was so windy that you couldn't be in a tree. I mean, that the trees were going just absolutely, or it might have been the 13th, but anyways, it was just so windy, and I was like, I was in a tree, but it was just like, I was like, kind of holding on type of deal, and then eventually got down and just hunted off the ground. But checking my cameras, I had bucks moving during that, just covering ground. And honestly, I mean, there's probably not as many hunters in the woods at that time either, because nobody wants to be in the tree.
No, it's probably not a good idea for us to be in there either.
No, it's if probably
sane.
But Zach Fehrenbaugh said it on the podcast before. He just looks at that as an opportunity to hunt from the ground. Mm-hmm. It's just like that's your looks at the conditions and just figures out when is the most opportune time. What's the most opportune tactic for the conditions that are being thrown at you there?
Yeah, and that's a good clear cut hunt, because one, it's going to be quiet, but two, you don't have the big trees where the limbs can come down on you either.
Yeah,
but no, I agree with that as well.
And what about like rain, like early season? So thinking about, when this comes out, a few weeks after that, seasons are opening up and starting to do that. I think it was 2000. What year was it, Dad, that you killed that one opening day off the ground?
15 or 17?
No, it wasn't 17. It might have been 17. Yeah, one of those years.
Yeah. But yeah, it was opening morning, and I found a hot scrape the weekend before. And it usually it was odd. It was all ripped up. I threw a camera on it, and I figured that, opening morning, I'm going to go in there with my climber. I had a tree marked and everything. I'll pull the camera card, I'll climb the tree, and see what I see. Well, you get in there, pull the camera card, climb the tree, and there was zero activity from the time I hung the camera. So it's like, okay, it had rained that night, and it was quiet. It was raining. I'm thinking back, I didn't get out until 1 or 2 that afternoon, because it was pouring in the rain, and you went out and got soaked.
Yeah.
And I remember you were texting me and saying, you out? And I said, no, I'm not going to head out until afternoon. But I did go down and pulled the camera card, and actually, I didn't even climb it. I got about halfway up the tree, and I said, I better read this card to see, because you could tell there was no activity. And I come back down, hiked back to the truck, dumped the stand, and started
just scouting through a clear cut and still hunting, and I was going to try to get a doe, and I heard some heavy hoofs run, and it's like the wind's in my face, it's out in front of me, it's just, you know, I knew it was a heavy deer, so I immediately reached for my grunt call, which I wasn't grunting at all yet.
Mm-hmm.
I just gave a couple soft grunts. Just I don't know why. Just I guess it's more of a habit, but I didn't think it, you know. In
yeah,
hindsight,
if you heard, yeah, maybe. Yeah, thinking he's a deer.
Yeah, but I'm thinking, you know, they probably aren't grunting right now, but I did it anyways, and I just stood there for a little while, and probably 5 minutes go by, and I just started creeping up a little further and just going real slow and looking and looking, and I broke out to this little grassy trail in a clear cut, and there he is standing, staring straight at me at probably around 25 yards. And I took the front of him, heard him pile up. I mean, I could see the frame. He was, I had some nice bucks on the outskirts of that clear cut on scrapes. And, you know, from the frame, I knew he was a shooter. I didn't know which one he was, but it turned out to, you know, it was a real nice eight.
Oh, cool.
But that was the earliest I ever shot one. And it was very unexpected.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I remember that as far as like an early season one, and that's I mean, you know, you were talking earlier about not having any food sources. It's like sometimes, you know, early season you can kind of, as you're out scouting, you know, you have the right weather conditions where it can be quiet and walk through those cuts like yep. that and be able to sneak up on one.
I think this year, early season, you know, one thing I'm telling myself is that, you know, the days are pretty long as far as like an all day sits, pretty much not what everybody does, but I mean, just being in the woods, I feel like you're looking at early October. This is when the bulk of the feeding is happening. All the mast, everything is ripe. Mm-hmm. No matter what it is, they know the season's coming. You know, you get into the middle of October, rut, scrape, going out at night, checking does, you know what I mean, or whatever it might be, but
well, I'm shooting a new bow this year, and I am pumped. After playing around with a buddy's Hoyt RX8, the smile on my face made the decision for me. The first thing I noticed with the new Hoyts were their extremely smooth draw cycles and the ability to adjust the back wall to make it rock solid like I prefer. I outfitted my own RX8 with the inline accessories that made installation extremely easy and balanced out the bow. My favorite accessory so far is a simple one. It's the Ghost Sticks 2.0 adjustable legs to make your bow like a tripod, but it doesn't interfere with any part of the bow or the limbs or anything like that. In addition, the integrated kickstand within the HBX Exact cams protect your string from excess wear when you put your cam into the dirt. Ground hunting or spot and stalk just got easier. If you want to experience what I'm talking about, head to your nearest Hoyt dealer and take a test drive yourself. You can learn more at Hoyt.com. The Mobile Hunters Expo is a consumer-based hunting show unlike any other. It provides an interactive learning experience where you can try all things mobile hunting and learn from the best in the business. Come experience an unbiased, community-based environment where you can improve your hunting skills and find the right equipment for your needs. I'll be speaking at the Nor'easter Show in Mannheim, Pennsylvania at Spooky Nook Sports from August 9th to 11th, 2024. So come check it out or either of the other shows in Michigan and Georgia. You can purchase tickets online at themobilehuntersexpo.com or grab tickets at the door. I'll see you there.
I'm trying to say, okay, I have time off here early October. I'm going to, with the Timber Ninja saddle, the light setup, I'm going to try to stay in the woods a lot more through the day, you know, on the fringes where I think these deer, I still feel like there's a lot of bedding going on, maybe more nocturnal, but if you got some fair, decent weather, they're still going to get up daytime and they're going to be in an area where there's browse, and I'm going to try to put more time in the woods. Maybe I'll move four times through the first week of October, but just be out there because at any time I feel like the pressure's low.
Mm-hmm.
No one's really out there. Food is number one. You can capitalize on a deer just by having a lightweight setup, moving. I don't know if you're in a tree for 2 hours, get down, hike a little bit. There's a creek down there. There's a lot of water weeds. Maybe I'll try that for a couple hours. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I'm going to try to stay more instead of, like, the traditional. I'm going to get out after work, hunt the evening, or, you know, like, the midday. There's a lot of times I'll get deer just being mobile, not saying they're moving miles. And then there's also another thing. If you're catching them on a camera, some daylight, well, chances are he's still close. I mean, yeah, up here it's different with browse, but where he's hanging out, that time of year, you know, he's starting to slow down movement because there is a lot of, you know, this is a browse area. So there's kind of like you got to really differentiate what, you know, if you have some mast or something, but you can catch them feeding a lot more, and they're kind of like sensing that I need to slow down a little bit, because I know in another 2 weeks I'm going to be zero to hero, you know. So I think I'm going to try to make more of my early season hunts, especially when I travel and you got the whole day, and, you know.
Make the most out of that.
Make the most. Yeah. Have the lights out, the ultimate, have the sticks. And like Joe said, go check, scout a little bit, pull a card, check it. Well, I'm going to sit here for a few hours and then maybe work it to where you'll hunt a little bit during the day, then get in your spot. How we talk about anymore about thermals drifting and deer moving at last a little bit of light. You want to be maybe in a different area, you know, that last 20 minutes. So maybe work your way into that. You know, I know a lot of these areas I know in the past I would be pretty rugged. I'm like, I don't want to do an afternoon hunt because I'm going to go all up over the mountain, you know, spend an hour just for 2 hours of hunting legit. But I'm like, maybe I'll go in at noon, sit on a ridge, you know, thermals coming up, drop down a little bit, work. So I feel like in my mind, take advantage of the early season. And I know in the past I did a lot more rut hunting, but it was with work. But you have chances, you know.
I think I'm going to – one of my strategy changes this year, and a lot of it comes from listening to your podcast with the other guests, and that is the bedding. You know, I never was a big bed hunter because, you know, it always – to me it seemed like they never bed the same spot.
Yeah.
But I've been running cameras on some beds over the last couple of years, just taking it for informational purposes. And, yeah, they don't bed there every night, but he might be there once a month. You know, and it's multiple bucks using these same beds,
it seems like,
at least the ones I've been monitoring. So, and I think that I'm gonna be aggressive, a little more aggressive, and try to get in near some of these beds.
Mm-hmm.
And if I blow them out, no big deal. I think by the time rut comes, or they probably don't even rut in that area, some of these bucks, they move, you know, mile and a half away, 2 miles away, where they you know, you pick them up on scrapes during the rut. But I think I'm gonna try some more, being a little more aggressive, and try to get close to bedding on some of these things.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. And you made a good point. And I've heard Greg Glitzinger say it. And I know you spent a lot of time with Greg at scouting camp. Is like,
yeah, I learned a lot from him. That
It's just like what you might think you're screwing up in October, well, it doesn't really matter once it comes November at that point, because those deer are moving, they're doing different things and everything. So you might as well be aggressive and try to hunt in October. And because I find I'm not good hunting early in places that I know well, because I'm too cautious, because you almost know too much sometimes, where you're just, you look at these places and you're like, oh, I'm pretty sure this deer is over here, living here. And, you know, yeah, like you said, he might only be there once a month.
You
kind of stay away from it, or you walk the same pass, you do these things. And, you know, think about it, like, I guess the way that I'm going to approach it, like, especially in October, is think about it as I'm shed hunting with a little bit more of a cautious approach and thinking about the wind and stuff, but not always taking the same route into an area or doing things, just trying to find these little holes.
Access is big.
Mm-hmm.
And some of my prime scrapes that are very active during the rut, I don't know where these bucks are coming from.
Mm-hmm.
I can't pick them up in the summer, a lot of them. So I have no clue where they're bedding. So I'm not even going to attempt to hunt them until that, what I think is a good week.
Yep.
So I'm staying out of there completely. I'm not going to do any human intrusion on my part. And other guys in there may very well be. And that's like some of the, like you were saying about that one, you went off of historical data where these, you know, last year and where these, that buck was crossing and that.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? There might have been somebody else that
yeah, you're right.
was in there, yep. and just that human scent may have changed his pattern.
Yep.
But I see that because we're Bo and I, and I think you're the same way. But I'm constantly expanding my area, putting cameras as a leave them soak for a year, checking them once in a while, but as gathering information, not necessarily going to hunt that area, but always trying to keep it fresh, and a potential area or picking up a good buck or whatever. And, I'll get an area and I have all kinds of great activity end of October, daylight photos. So then I go and hunt it. And it seems like after my first sit, it just shuts down. And I think it's my presence. I mean, they knew I was there. I might not have seen nothing, but I think they definitely scented me and knew I was there. And, you got to go back and analyze that and say, okay, what can I have done different? How could I have accessed that differently? Is it even huntable? There's scrapes that I have that there's no good access. And if it's a good buck, you got to take the chance and go with it. But there's one scrape that I know I've learned through the years. I've hunted it, probably 3 or 4 years, and a couple times a season. And I don't think I'm going to hunt it this year because I can't get in there without them knowing I'm in there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to find something on the outskirts of that area that maybe, give me the advantage, give me the non-intrusive access or. Yeah, I just got to – so that's another thing I'm changing up, trying to just going back through and analyzing, these scrapes I'm hunting where I have good camera activity, but I may not be seeing deer. Why? What's going on? Well, there's that other situation I was telling you about last year, Bo, where same scenario, nice bucks, daylight activity, but it was in a shallow little gully, I guess, going up the hillside. It's probably 3/4 way up, but the wind swirled in there. It didn't matter. It didn't matter where or when I went and what wind I sat on. I got blowed at. Mm-hmm. I did see a couple bucks. They weren't within shooting range. None would have been when I would have shot at anyways, but I was getting busted every time I sat there. So I'm not going to, I still run a camera on it for informational purposes, but I'm not going to hunt it this year. I just don't think I can get away. I got to find something on the outskirts of that trails going in, or maybe a scrape that I don't know about. But I got to hunt it differently.
Well, yeah, and that reminds me too. And I remember that situation with you, but I remember Uncle Francie talking about that specifically, where he was hunting this really big deer and he had seen him and he blew at him, and he saw the second biggest deer they had in there, blew at him, same thing. It was like the spot to be at, but there was no way of hunting it. It was, again, one of those little shallow kind of ditches or valleys that are in there. And if anyone is listening, Rusty Johnson talked about it in episode 310 about like these ditches and stuff and hunting them. And you can, but it's so tough in these little valleys and these little, and then they're so tough. Some of them don't even show up on maps, because they're such a shallow spot, but it creates this like just vacuum and, swirling. And, as I came up with a term that I'm going to start using, it's called thermal tsunami. It's just where the wind just does whatever it wants to.
That's right, Bill.
That's a good one.
You like that?
Yeah.
I was joking.
We got a thermal tsunami going on here.
When I was out in Utah, I was doing a video for Sitka on wind and thermals, and some of these guys, I said, I might throw out a term you guys never heard of before, and they're like, "What do you mean?" And I was like,
"Bunch of rookies, thermal
tsunami." And they looked at me, they're like, "What is that?"
You schooled them.
I was like, "That's something I made up."
But, you can't tell me. Guys, this is what we use back east. This is turn. You guys ain't ready for this.
It's going to make the next edition of Webster.
Yeah. But honestly, some of those spots are just unhuntable. But like you said, I think that's the where you kind of look at it and you try to look at it from a wider view at that point and try to figure out how are they getting to this spot?
Where else were they going during that day?
It's kind of like a saddle. So like, saddles are in a rut. We've talked about it in the scouting camps a lot. It's like, okay, yeah, that might be a hunter magnet. Maybe the bucks don't want to go through there during the daylight, the mature deer, But where are they coming from to get to that point? Because they might be skirting it a little bit, or they might be and trying to look at, you know, the bigger picture on where they might be coming from and going there. But the hard part about that is when you find one of those, like, let's just call it a hub, as far as like where trails might be crossing and that little dip and where all the wind's swirling and they have the advantage. Obviously, if you're sitting there, you have multiple trails that come to that point where you start mm-hmm. going the outskirts. You might only be on one of those trails mm-hmm. or one, you know, you're, right. you know, you only might have a 10% chance of seeing the deer, where if you would have had 60% if you were in that spot, but you actually have a chance of killing them at that point.
Right.
It, what Joe touched on is totally be aware. You know, when you're going in there, you're putting human scent in. You know, you could be the reason why the deer aren't showing up. People, I think, sometimes, you know, just don't believe that they're the, you know what I mean? I know years ago, Jason was hunting, my buddy. There's nobody in there. I'm going through there. I said, whoa, you're there every day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which a situation really, like Joe said, ask yourself, did I F this up? Is this, you know, I'm not, you know, like being dropped in on a helicopter sent free, you know what I mean? You got to get in there. And I know there's times when I get to my stand, I'm like, get up in it. I'm like, oh, I made it. I didn't spook nothing. I feel like my entrance was good, because I take that all into consideration. You know, I was like, you know, and it is tricky getting to these spots, because you could bump one. Maybe it's before daylight or daylight. You make a little bit too much noise. Your wind blows this way. And, you know, that's why I like going in sometimes in the morning at light, so you can see what you bump. But there's so many times that you get to your tree and you're like, weights lift off my shoulder, because I made it. Because there's things that you know you could do that potentially ruin your spot. I know, for instance, last January or January before, I found a place. It was a public land, dead end to the north parking spot, and with a predominant southwest wind. The deer were downwind on these two east-facing points, and they would come from there, use the wind, feed on acorns. There's still some mast in January, but when I found the spot, and you couldn't access from the bottom of those points, it was private, so the only access was here, and I went across, wind to my back, and I found some does feeding them acorns, and then I looked, I moved a little bit, I looked on a ridge, I seen a good shooter buck. He saw me. And I'm like, all right, well, like natural thinking, I spooked a couple of deer, but they're here. So the next day, I dropped the camera to Oaks, where the next day, dead calm in the morning, you know, no wind, and but only heavy leaf litter, park, wind on my back, and I go set up in them oaks. Oh, there's actually an inch of snow, I think, on the ground, and tracks all in them oaks, but thinking that the deer are further downwind on them points, I was like morning hunting, playing a wind and whatever. But here, an evening, the thermals dropped to the south down a hill, and there was deer down there snorting at me. I'm like, what the hell's going on? And here I started putting the pieces of the puzzle, and I grabbed my camera that I had the day before. The deer below me, even though they were should have been out on that point, it was the group of does that I spooked there. They said, when I'm going to get to these acorns tomorrow, I'm going to use the thermals and smell where. And then I looked, and there was a stand right there, and there was a little bit of saddle on a ridge. And it was like, I ruined that spot before, like me going in there that first time. Cause yeah, it was January, and their, you know, hunting pressure was low. But as soon as I parked and went in and bumped, they knew exactly where I parked. They knew exactly where that stand was. And so the does that I bumped there, they end up using the thermals that evening. I'm like, there ain't no tracks down there. Why are these blowing? The thermals are going. It's perfect. And I checked that camera, and that buck was there that morning, and he was like right at the dead end parking spot. There was a thick patch of pines. I had him at 8 o'clock, like looking at where I'm coming from and walking toward them pines. I said, he's laying in them thick pines, hearing me park, and I'm walking across here, and the does that I spooked the night before using the thermals, I ruined that spot just like that.
Yeah.
It was done. It was like just me finding it. I think it went back to a November, all hunting pressured, and everybody parked. It was a heavily hunted area, and it was. But that's what, just be aware of exactly everything you're doing.
Yep.
You could ruin it without even knowing, but ask yourself these questions. And like I said, why is this doe down here? They should be coming from here, and that camera, just like what Joe said, man, you can literally ruin an area without knowing it, you know? So it's something to totally be aware of, you know, early.
And that's kind of where, you know, people always say your first sit is your best, opportunity. Yeah. And I agree with that. But if you do have a good access, I don't have a problem sitting days.
Yeah.
If I feel that my access is the best it can be and I'm you know, very low impact. And I have a couple of them that I will hunt them multiple times, and I do see deer, you know.
You could stink, you can get in, access, park. Yep. It's like, you know.
I wish they were all my setups were like that.
There's very few that you find that, do happen that way.
Yeah, and that is so true. It's like, and I think that's probably where that term comes from as far as, you know, your first time in.
Yep.
And it's a lot of time, it's like, because if you don't have good access, but, you know, the reality of hunting the big woods is like you're not finding patterns like you're going to find in farm country. You're not going to find those deer coming every day. So going in and I'm not saying every day, but going in and being able to do it. So sometimes it does take multiple days. So that's where, planning your access is a little bit more important in those situations so that you do have multiple opportunities to go in and hunt those spots. And some of them, like you said, lay out really nice and you can get in there unscathed. You know, like where in 2021, where I killed my buck opening morning, I think I could have done that route every single day and never spooked anything just the way that I had from my access and using that stream. There's other spots that I know I'm risking it all for that one sit. And that's the nature of the beast.
There's one thing hunting early season that really was a last couple of years I did more early season is the leaf litter that is non-existent when you're out early October into September. You could really sneak around where it's a oak leaves are that thick, and you get into November, it's like, wow, I can so use that to your advantage. You can get in tighter if you know where they're bedding, and like I said, they're getting up to move around. You can maybe get 100 yards from a deer, you know, talking about that bed Joe said and stuff like that. You can access a little easier.
The leaf litter thing, that's a good point, because early in the season, you don't have all of that laying down on the ground. You get some of those places with those big oak ridges, big hardwood ridges.
It's brutal.
Like when we were hunting in January in Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. The leaves were a foot and a half thick, and it was dry, and it was just like everything in the whole world heard you as you walked across there.
And that's predominantly what you get in November, but when I started hunting, it was like, wow. Because that's the one thing that I have a hard time dealing with is getting into my spots, you know. And that's why a lot of times in areas like that, during the rut or, you know, October, November, I'll go in an hour and a half before light just to, you can, that's the only time you can get in.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not as spooked that time.
For sure.
Yeah. So you were talking a little bit about kind of the, you know, your strategies there, but like as far as the early season for you, Johnny, do you feel like, is there like one buck that's got your, you know, your heartstrings right now, like that you want to focus on, or are you kind of just, you know, kind of free balling a little bit and figuring it out?
I don't have anything. There's one, well, you know, the big eight. Yeah. I mean.
The big, come on, John. I wasn't intentionally setting that up, but it kind of fell right in.
I think you crossed the road before pulled in your driveway here.
Did he?
Because I only live, my spot's only 20 minutes away, but he gets around. I think it was him. He's everywhere, but where we hunted with Michael and got his deer, I was just talking to Joe that I think that's where the big eight's at. So, I mean, I'm going to focus on him, and there's a good 10 in the area, and I don't know. I'm just winging it. You know, if there's 130 class, you know, nothing. Big eight's always on the radar, but so
yeah, I get it.
But historical bucks besides that one here or any other areas I hunt. It's all just, you know, new data and good bucks that are there. I'm going to take so.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Yeah. That's kind of fun, though, at the same time, just, like, not having the expectation or, like, look, you know you're looking for that one deer, but at the same time, it's just, like, kind of fun to not.
It's fun, but then it messes me up because I'm not so laser-focused. I'm not sure which, you know, if I got a couple 130 to 40s, I kind of, like, there's not one that I want to hunt and focus all my energy. And so you got, like, a little bit of, you know, energy here, a little bit of energy there. It's not all one, you know, solid thing that you're going to, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's kind of like you string yourself out and you don't know as much about four different decent bucks as you do if you were all focused on that energy on one buck.
That's like I was talking to a guest, James Yates, he's a mule deer hunter, and he was talking about, you know, grinding out, and it takes him, you know, months before he ends up killing the deer that he's after and going after it. And he goes, I asked him about motivation for some of these things, and he was like, you got to find the deer that gives you enough motivation that the tank doesn't drain very easily.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's
that,
like,
makes sense.
And the way I compared it to is, like, if you have a water bladder versus a can of beer, you dump a can of beer, it goes out pretty quick. You empty a 3-liter water bladder, it takes a while. That's your motivation dropping throughout the season.
Or a keg.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So that's, you know, just trying to find that one. What about you? I mean, since stickers, you haven't really had a buck that you were seriously after.
One I picked up last year on a scrape at night, he's a good buck. He's not comparable to stickers as far as that classification, but, you know, he'd be in the 140s probably, and that's a real good buck for me in the areas I hunt. But I just haven't found him yet. I'm hoping, you know, I definitely will hunt that scrape in that time frame again. I'm just trying to, you know, get these photos of these sheds, these shed bucks that I found decent sheds of, or my historical data. You know, there was a good buck in there last year, and I, like I said, I think I mentioned I haven't checked all my cameras yet that I've been having soak. I'm just starting to get to them and rebattery them up. You know, I got to some last weekend and had, you know, some decent bucks on it, but I got my spots in my mind. I got them on my papers and my log, you know, and it's all going to come together here probably mid-October. You know, that mid-October time frame, hopefully I have it's going to constantly evolve. I mean, throughout the season, you know, depending what camera shows you what, but I'm anxious to get out there and check my cameras that have been soaking, you know, since January, February, March, or a year or better, some of them, and see what they've been picking up, if anything. It's too early for me to say yet, but I do have high hopes, and hopefully we get some good weather as far as cold weather during, you know, the right time frame to give us some good action.
Yeah. Well, you forgot to mention, so Johnny, it's going to get interesting this year. There is one deer that we call blur line deer that blurs lines between my dad's areas and my areas that we hunt, that, you know, that we may have competition for.
Ooh. So
that's going to be...
I put my money on your dad.
I do it too.
Or we got in South Dakota.
I know when he's going to be in Alaska.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I'm going to be in South Dakota with him, so I could probably, you know...
I could probably step in.
You might be able to step in.
a little cash.
But, so I know his schedule, so...
Yeah,
he's going to be gone a lot more than me.
October 28th through November 5th, John, so I'm going to be...
What?
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
I'll be sending him a photo of that buck.
Yeah, oh, for sure, Joe.
Yeah, so that's his time to capitalize, you know.
Wow.
And
you better get focused on early season, Bo. What's your strategy?
Well, he's
getting picking our brain. He's sitting there like a sponge soaking it all up.
Yeah, honestly, so for that particular deer, I don't really have a very good early season strategy because I don't know what to do other than is during that time of years is spend time in the woods walking around and trying to find it, you know, risking bumping them. But I don't I don't have a good plan for him at that time of year. But at the, you know, so my early season plan is really to try to find these areas, see what the oaks are doing as far as acorns, and hit up some of those spots. And knowing when he shows up during the rut, and kind of coming back to that area and focusing more at that time frame on him than otherwise. So that's kind of my plan for that deer. But it's funny because we were looking at maps the other day, and he's like, "Hey, I'm going to put a camera here. How close is that?" I'm like, "That's a couple hundred yards from mine." But, you know, well, yeah, we could. I said, no, all joking aside, I was like, we're going to need some teamwork for this one.
Yeah.
And see what.
He's probably, I'm figuring 4.5, maybe five.
Five this year. Yeah.
I might give him another year. Let Bo
play with him a little bit.
Let Bo play with him and learn some information. Give me some information, you know.
Let him get wise to Bo and maybe move into your
area. That's probably what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
No, he should hopefully blow up this year.
But, yeah, no.
We haven't got any photos of him yet. We don't know if he.
I don't have my prime camera in the spot where I got him all the time.
I might have one there.
You probably do. That's the camera, John, that he picked up the shed in front of while I was I don't know where the heck I was at.
I don't know where you.
But I get a picture on my cell cam because I had a cell camera there of him standing smiling in front of my camera with a shed laying right in front of the camera in the scrape.
Yeah.
And I thought he was playing with me. I thought he set me up because.
No, I didn't.
No.
And, but anyways, for me though, like my early season. I keep saying I want to get, you know, better at hunting early season and doing that, but the last 2 years I've been gone the first week and a half of the season, so that doesn't help. But even in like the beginning to middle part of October, I think I'm gonna get more aggressive, and I'm gonna try to get into these spots where I think deer are bedding at, and I'm gonna play a little bit more of even sitting in the tree middle of the day.
Yeah, I think so, me too.
And Paul Butera really opened up my eyes on that. He does that a lot, where, you know, he'll find these spots and just kind of get on the fringes and where there's some browse there and just sit all day. Like, he won't even go in, you know, early in the morning because it can spook him there, but sneak in, climb a tree and just wait for him to get up and feed around a little bit, you know, within a 100-yard circle or whatever he's doing. And, you know, like an example would be that spot you and I went last summer, and we put up that camera and there's all that browse in there. Like, that's a spot you could probably sit all day and a buck could shift around in a couple 100-yard circle, browse in some blackberry briars, lay down, get up, move a little bit.
Yeah, you're right.
And do that. It's just so hard to have the motivation to do that.
I think it's easier when you move a few times.
Yeah.
To just sit in one spot, maybe combine scouting.
And then it gets you the rust out. You know, get up and down the tree. I mean, you're practicing during the summer, but you're usually doing the same tree.
Yeah, you're right.
And it also, did you bring everything? You know, first time out, you go to climb, it's like, oh, where's my belt?
Forgot this, yeah.
Where's this? Yeah, where's that? And, you know, I like to get out mainly to make sure I got my pack packed with everything I'm going to need for the season. And
yeah, get the rust, and then that's when you find the points where you need to wrap up with hockey tape, because you start banging metal around everything, doing that back and forth.
But getting back to what Paul Butera had said, he had one thing that I keyed off of what he said was about the Spartan Forge prediction as far as core area days.
Yeah.
You know, some people just, well, I'm not going to hunt now because, and I'm probably would be guilty of that because, you know, like I said, I talk about the scrapes that, you know, they don't bed, that's not their core area. They're traveling and hitting these scrapes that I hunt. You know, so instead of, okay, it's core area day, I'm not going to hunt that scrape, but if I know where he's bedding, I'm going to try to get in there.
Yeah, I look for them.
But you got to find
his core area.
Yeah. That's where, you know, like I said, that's one of the strategies that I'm going to, the early season I'm going to change up is try to, you know, I got some beds marked. I had some bed marks. I got some historical data from cameras on beds that hopefully that information will help it maybe pull it together where I can get it done early season.
Yeah, that'd be sweet.
And that'd be your camp cook.
That'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I got the hot tub in now, Joe. I show up, he'd be in a hot tub.
Well, I'll be cooking for our camp, and then you know, your dinner might be a little late.
That's all right.
Well, and yeah, that that's the thing is with the early season, the way I look at it now is like, yeah, I rarely, if ever, know where a buck is bedded at specifically.
Yeah.
But it's like, why not go and just try it? And when you have the time, and I understand that not everybody has the time and be able to do that, but if you have a couple hours, why not go try it?
Yeah, why
and,
not? Yeah.
And go and go see what you can do, or a weekend or whatever, you know. It's like, for me, obviously I have more time in totality than most people do, but at the same time I am traveling a lot, so in Pennsylvania alone, I really don't have any more time than other people do to get out and during that season, that time frame. So for me, it's just going to be like trying to take advantage of that time and just and especially early on and get aggressive and play around. You know, we're talking about being serious with access earlier, but when you don't know exactly what's going on, sometimes you have to risk it.
Yeah,
and that's, you know, it can sound contradicting, but it's a ever evolving learning thing. And when you bump them, then you'll learn, like, okay, that's probably not the right access for that.
Or like that cut that we were talking about that we scouted last year, you could probe a little bit, work your way and start on the edge. Remember we said that? Get here on this edge, go in another 100 yards, you can get up, you could see a little ways and just start probing, just easing your way in. Boom, mm-hmm. boom, boom. He ain't here in this 80, 100 yards. You know, if you look at maybe what a deer might do, you know, a lot of film of these deer bedding, a couple hours, they're going to bed down, get up, walk around. So if you're in that spot for 1 or 2 hours on the edge watching the first 100 yards, you don't see a deer get up and move. Okay, let me go in another 100. Get up. Let me mm-hmm. watch this next 100. You know, you can maybe, you know, in a day cover 300-400 yards of cut, you know what I mean, and have a chance at them.
Yeah.
You know, just, and then they're just feeding that time of year, you know, take advantage of that's definitely, I guarantee there. I just asked myself, I said, man, how can I take advantage of just catch them feeding, being in the area?
You know? Right. Yep.
Yeah. And just have fun with it. And
yeah, exactly.
And
enjoy your time, you know, off being in a tree, just like, because, and another thing, like, the older I get, it's like, it goes so fast.
Oh, yeah.
You know, your rut's here, it's gone. It's like, man, I should have took advantage of more of my October time, not just the evenings, and I'm starting to learn. Like, when you have time, you know, off of work, you know, just relax, go in, get in a tree with that saddle, sit, move another 100 yards, move another 100 yards, man. You can work yourself right across the cut, you know.
Work yourself right across the country, just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right over to Bose.
no, but that's such a good point. It's like, it just have fun with it, because like we, you know, it's a long season, and the only way you learn is by playing, trying different things, and you know what my dad says works for him, what you say works for you, what I say works for me doesn't work for the fourth person. You know, it's just like taking a little bit and playing with it and trying to, and that's, you know, I'm as I'm saying this, as I'm acting like I'm giving advice to somebody else, I'm also giving it to myself, as far as just having fun with it, getting out. And if there's days, like for me, especially early on, if there's days I don't want to sit, then I'll just go out and scout, like just and you have the ability, you have fun with it, try to find that sign, try to find the spot. If you don't feel like you have this, the spot you want to be in, then go find it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way at least I look at it.
Yeah. And then, if it's an area that you know, your home turf, I guess, so to speak, you know, have multiple hunt plans. You know, you're big on the hunt plans. I'm big on the hunt plans. I don't go to the extent, as far as the logging, I print up topo maps, and I'll have, a topo map printed out that has what wind I can hunt that stand. And, you know, depending on the forecast, you know, I shuffle through my papers, or I have a list of, I do have a list, I guess, of what winds I can hunt stands. And then I pull that topo map out, and okay, then I'll even lay it out for mom. I'll lay it out, you know, I'll put, this is where I'm going to be. Sometimes I don't end up get a gut moment and I'm in mid-travel and I end up somewhere else.
Yeah.
But at least, you know, you gotta have a plan. And then, or if you get there and somebody's parked, you know, are they hunting that scrape?
Yeah.
Probably not, but there's human intrusion in there now.
You're right.
Most of the time, if somebody's parked in the
parking area,
I'm going to go. I will go to my plan B.
Yep.
But,
you know, who knows where they're at. But yeah, just have multiple plans. And even out of state, I've heard you on your podcast, and, you know, with that, you got to have multiple plans from the e-scouting and just be prepared and then have fun with it. I mean, the worst thing you can do is go in and you get in, there's all kind of hunter pressure, and it's like now you're getting in a, you know, a bad mood because you're here to hunt and so is everybody else. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have these backup plans, you go and find them and make the best of it and have fun with it.
Yeah. I don't remember what year. I think it was 2016 where I go into the spot. It was going to be the money spot. You know, everything was good there. Can't wait. My week off during the rut, I get there and they're fixing this road and they got dump trucks and they're going up and they actually dump stone on the side of my truck up in the wheel. I don't get it. Maybe it was another hunter that hunted there too that didn't like that I was there. But nonetheless, it was just like, it threw me completely off. And I was just like, what am I going to do? You know, but I did have backup plans, which is, again, where that helps, of having those plans of, okay, I can go to the other places and I can do that with, you know, talking about having fun. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't mean just like, oh, just going to lackadaisically, you know, go through the woods, so to speak. If you still want to be successful, having some sort of a plan to fall back on. For me, having fun is reduced stress on these things. And me having a plan and backup plans reduces stress during that time frame to be able to move and bounce back and forth. And I don't know. I see that being something that's super important. And it's tough to sit down and want to do that, because like the fun part of hunting is being in the woods and the scouting, but sitting down and reviewing your notes and kind of organizing that stuff isn't necessarily the most fun part of doing it. But I believe for me, it helps out to be able to do that. And I've said this to Johnny before, you know, half jokingly, but I was like, if Johnny wrote down some of his stuff and had the plan, there ain't a deer safe in the country.
And talking about your plans, I don't know if I write much down, but like I know when I'm traveling, so I live near Pittsburgh, it's 2.5 hours, like I'll drive up here every situation, so I'll kind of have an idea where I want to go, maybe four spots, but I replay everything that could possibly happen. If someone's there, I need to go to this spot, or if you know, what I had on this trail camera doesn't play. It's like, even when I would travel 5 hours to another state or 10 hours, I don't listen to radio, nothing. I'm playing, you know, I have a plan in mind, mm-hmm. that's my starting point. But it's like, if this doesn't happen, where am I going next? You know, or it's just constantly thinking, and or should I check this and be efficient with your time? Because we talk about like getting into the rut and you go somewhere, maybe an out-of-state hunt or something. You don't have days to waste.
No.
You know, and there's times, like I say, go in the woods at night and grab cameras and design a plan. Like, I'm going to check this. If this is happening, well, then I'm going to go here. This is plan B. But I feel like it's all like a situational, where I'm going next, this state, the whole way there, the whole route, or the days before, I got something laid out in my brain, you know, what I'm going to do, and just plan and have backups and be ready. And because there's always like a variable that's going to come in there that's going to screw up your first plan.
Yeah.
You know,
some best laid plans never work out.
So exactly. Just like, okay, what's, because I want to be efficient with my time. It's that time of year. And I'm just like, planning. If this don't work here, well, I could go here. What if the acorns are going? If there's a guy hunting here, it's like, I ask myself 400 questions to zone in on what my plan is, plan A, plan B, you know. But that's really important.
Yeah. No, I mean, I you know, I was, you know, joking when it's kind of saying about the plan thing, because like everybody has a different way and how they function. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for you, you have a very good, as far as being mentally able to remember things and be able to go through it in your mind. For me, I
got to see it.
I got to see it. I got to have it written down, because I forget. And as soon as I see it on paper, it's like, okay, I remember this is going on. Or might, you know, if I have it in the journal on Spartan Forge or whatever it is, sometimes I just need that mental trigger to do it, where it sounds like for you, you don't even, like, you just, you have it there, and then you take the time beforehand turning off the radio and everything and kind of getting yourself in that zone, that space.
I mean, it's I've drove 18, 12 hours and just never listened to the radio, just so focused on what I'm doing when I get there. What's the weather? What's this wind?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is this spot good? I'm going to run and check this camera, figure this out. Just so you can get to work when you get there. But that's a lot of fun of hunting in itself, mentally stimulating to learn. You're always learning, and it's never the same plan. It's always going to change, and different variables and different things to make you adapt and learn new things. You're always learning something new. So
yeah.
And then I think another important thing is establish your goal.
Yeah,
what do you
want to
take?
Right.
You know, is it going to be better the buck you got last year? Is it just going to be, I'm only hunting one certain buck that's a monster, or is it going to be any legal buck?
I think that's a good point.
Whatever gets you excited, or
I do, because I don't feel like I have, like, I'm going to have to focus on that, because I feel like going into PI, I don't have a goal, and then that's when I screw up, because it's like I'll be hunting like a one, maybe average bucks, 20s, 30s. And I'm like, man, I should be hunting the big eight. Then I'll go run over here. But I think that's something really, that's a good point, Joe, that I'm going to really focus on this year. Is like, set a goal. I want to shoot a 130 and go for it. Because I will get into the year and be like, why am I only hunting a 130? I got the big eight over here. He's 150 inch. I don't have a set goal. And I think that's where I get messed up, is because I'm all over the place. I don't know where the fuck I'm at, you know. But I think,
your time available too. You know, some people may, because of other, you know, other commitments, may only have weekends to hunt, you know. So, you know, you got to just figure out,
set a goal
in your mind, what you're hunting, you know, what your time's going to be, and go off of that.
Yeah.
You know, and nobody, you don't have to shoot a 110, 120 inch buck every year, or 130 inch buck. You know, if you like to eat them, shoot a legal buck if it makes you, you know.
Do you do that every year, Joe?
What?
Set your goal? Like, is that something you do early on when you
check? No, it's constantly developing. But when I'm going in, it evolves through the season too, depending on what my camera show me.
Yeah.
But if there is like with stickers, that was my goal for 5 years, and finally I picked them up hard horn and was able to.
Then it was realistic.
It was realistic.
Yeah, it comes to a point too where like you can have a goal, but if it's not realistic, you're like, okay, I got him in velvet, but you couldn't figure him out. So if you had no idea where he was at, to say that was your goal, that's a tough.
Right.
But
so
your goal, say you got 145, 50 inch. Like, is it like, okay, I'm not seeing him, so I'm going to, you know, as time goes on through the season,
you punt, you go to the next goal. You know, with stickers, you know, if I didn't pick him up, it's like, okay, what's my plan B here? And it was kind of like your plans. Your goals are the same way, or maybe they are the same. You just got to adjust to it. But, you know, especially like when I'd go to Ohio hunting, I wanted to, get a good buck there. And, but you get there and, you might have some cameras you might have set up in the spring in there, and you start checking cameras and it's like, oh, you know, I'm not, the biggest I'm getting is maybe a 140. And it's like, okay, now instead of trying to get a 170, 180 that, you know, Ohio's famous for, you can't hunt what's not there.
Yeah.
I mean, could be there, but you gotta adjust, you adapt. But, once you, I guess you have different options in your goals, I don't know, or multiple goals as well as a multiple plans.
Because I know sometimes I'm sitting in a tree, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to shoot. You know what I mean? I need to be like, okay, this spot has a couple 120s. Like, if I'm hunting here, I'm going to shoot here. But there's times I sit in a tree and I don't even know what I'm shooting.
So biggest fault, or one of my biggest triggers is a show. If I get a buck that's grunting, coming in, tearing shit up, you know, coming in to fight me.
Yeah.
He has a good frame. I'm shooting him.
Yeah.
I mean, all my plan went out of the window. I might be hunting a specific buck.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's him or not. But
your goals are gone.
I get triggered by a good show.
Yeah, that's cool.
And
Yeah, it's always been that way.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. And it's funny because my goals are just like so different depending on where I'm at, what I'm doing. Like it's just, and year to year. And I know there's some people like a mutual friend of ours, Clint Casper, it's like he always wants to hunt the oldest, biggest deer, whatever he's hunting. And that's what, and he sticks to it and he'll get his tag if he doesn't do that. And that's the way he's wired. And that's fine. I'm not in that way, at least at this point. And that could change in 10 years. But like right now I'm like, I like filling tags, but I also, you know, but I'll have certain goals for it. Like in Pennsylvania, the last few years, at first it was, I want to shoot a 4.5-year-old deer. And then it kind of bumped up to, I'd really like to shoot 130-inch deer. And so that was like kind of the goal. And just because for me, it's like, okay, I'm not going to continue to step that up as far as like saying, oh, this year it's going to be a 150 or bust, because sometimes that's really hard to come by, to be able to do that. And it's like not saying, oh, I don't want to challenge myself. If I'm looking realistically, that's going to be pretty dang difficult. Yeah, so it's like trying to look at what your situation is from your time, what the area holds, and then what you're going to be happy with and dictating that. And I think that's like, that's how I set
goals. And the key is what you're happy with.
Yeah.
Try to impress, you know, you're not trying to make other people happy. It's what makes you happy, what makes you tick, that if it makes you happy, take it.
Yeah. Now, like there's other things that can be thrown into it, like in West Virginia where I hunt at. So that's private coal mine property. And we've set a goal of all of us that are hunting there to shoot really big deer. So
that's kind of a rule.
No matter what my goal is,
that becomes a rule.
Yeah, yeah. That becomes a rule at that point.
Play by the rules, you know, and then,
yeah.
So that's the rule for that area.
Yeah. That's a rule. Yeah. Okay. I like that.
You play by the rules.
maybe that'll force something to happen, but we'll see. I don't know, but yeah, it's exciting. Everything's coming quick.
Yeah,
you know, think the season will be here before you know it, and you know, maybe some places, if anybody's listening to this, maybe it's opening up, maybe it's, you know, a couple weeks away. Things are happening. The thing I'll leave it with is just, yeah, I guess plan to work hard. Expect that it's going to be a long season and hope that it's, you know, you get it done when you can.
Hope for the short season.
Yeah, but I was going to say that, but at the same time, I don't always hope for, like.
No, you learn the most on a long season.
Exactly. That's what I remember years ago, but January, when you go hunting bow, more out of like, bow, so, but I've seen the whole season progress from beginning to end, and I hunted hard, and I loved every.
Yeah.
Even though you don't kill, you love, it's.
I was always learning that time.
Yeah, you were.
I was wore out. Did I have one killed somewhere else at that point? Maybe that. Sometimes if you get one killed, it drops your motivation a little bit. You know?
When I get amped up when I shoot one. Maybe later on, but I shoot when I want to go kill. It's like a drug.
Yeah, but like, I mean, like.
Like later in it, you're like, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, like I did okay.
You achieved your goal in this state.
Yeah.
And then, why don't I go to another state?
But last year, then you brought it up again. You're like, let's go to Ohio. It's January.
You
and
did,
I'm like,
yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, let's go. You know, I'm not.
We had a good time.
Yeah, we did. We had.
If the weather cooperated, if we had a little more damp, rainy weather, I think we could have probably killed one.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we'll wrap this one up here, and I think it was a pretty good episode there. So thank you guys for coming on again. And John, if anybody wants to check out Johnny's stuff, at the Johnny Stewart, does a little bit of consulting too. Mm-hmm. If anybody wants to have him help out with looking at maps or talking through things or just needs, you know, like a father figure in their life, Johnny's your guy.
I'm your guy.
You got a psychiatrist degree or anything?
I do have. I don't want to talk about that, right? I get too many people messaging me.
I may schedule an appointment.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Awesome.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit eastmeetswesthunt.com, Facebook at East Meets West Outdoors, and Instagram at East Meets West Hunt. If you enjoyed today's episode, please review and subscribe, and we'll catch you next time.